Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Ryan Hoover, who started something called Product Hunt, is going to join us, tell us a little bit more about what it does and how you can vote products up or down. Plus, a lot more social news up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 171, recorded Thursday, June 26th, 2014.
Welcome to The Social Hour. I'm Amber MacArthur. Sarah Lane will be joining us in a few minutes. I think she's just caught in traffic. In the meantime, we have Ryan Hoover on Skype from Product Hunt. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Amber.
So we got your name from Alexis Ohanian, who is, we're a big fan of his, but he is also on the show fairly regularly. And every once in a while, I reach out to him and I say, okay, Alexis, send us the name of someone who has a hot new company, a real innovator in this space. And you were the first person he picked. So talk a little bit about Product Find and or Product Hunt and what you guys do.
Yeah, so Product Hunt, So related to Reddit and Alexis, he's been helping me a little bit, giving me some advice on how to grow the community and how to deal with some things as the community grows. And really, you can describe Product Hunt as a Reddit for products to an extent. So it's a site where people submit links to different products, whether it's mobile apps, like you see SoundCloud just released their new update today. Peaky is this really interesting kind of ephemeral photo sharing app. And so people submit different links to different products, and you see different types of things each day. Then the community upvotes the best stuff. So you see sort of a leaderboard of what people think are most interesting. And inside the discussion of each of these products, you see comments and discussion, and the founders themselves jump in and start answering questions. So going back to Reddit, it's sort of like a founder AMA to an extent, where people are asking questions and getting answers directly from the people that built the product.
And why do you think that the online audience needed something like this? Because there are plenty of places where you can go and you can get product reviews, but this just is a little bit different than that.
Yeah, that's a good question. So Product Hunt is not a review site, and it's not a site to find the best thing for X. Like, if you want to find the best photo sharing app or the best product for a certain use case, you may find it on Product Hunt, but it's not really a place. It's not designed for that. It's in part news. So people go there to find things they won't find elsewhere. And just like you see on traditional tech press and inside of Hacker News on Reddit, you see these disparate places of people sharing cool, new, interesting creations each day. And Product Hunt is sort of a collection of all of that in one single place. So we take just the title of the product itself, a short tagline, and a link to the product page, and that's it. And then from, of course, within those discussions, you have people talking about the products.
And there's a real community sense here. I mean, at least that's what I felt when I first went onto this site. I mean, there's a real social media and community element. And why do you think that was important for you? And how have you been able to build that up?
Yeah, so Product Hunt initially started off with me and my own motivation to talk about products. So I could, for days, just talk about new interesting mobile apps or things that I find. And a lot of my conversations are around, like, what's on your home screen and that type of thing. Of course, on The Social Hour, that's what you guys talk about a lot as well. And so that's really what I wanted to build, or what I wanted to create, is an online place where you can take those offline interactions of talking about products and have it online. So I didn't find a place to do that. And the community side is what's, of course, that's the value in Product Hunt. Like, from a tech side and from a product perspective, it's not incredibly innovative. In fact, it looks very similar to Hacker News and Reddit. It's nothing nothing too unique. But it's the community and the people that contribute that make it interesting.
And what's really interesting, if you look at some of the top products right now, like, I'm just looking at some on the first page. You have the Splatter Tech shirt, which is a color-changing t-shirt. I have not heard of this yet, but it changes color when it gets wet. There is also TipCast, the easiest way to show and tell from a smartphone. And what I'm finding is that I'm discovering stuff here that I really haven't seen anywhere else on other tech blogs, right? I mean, I'm sure that's the goal, but where are people searching and how are they finding this stuff? And what's working here as far as getting your product that you want to talk about to the top of the page, so to speak?
Yeah, so it's right now we have a very small number of people in the community can post right now, just because if everyone, and I think Alexis used this term, I think twice now with me. He's like, marketers ruin the internet, or some variation of that. And if you imagine Product Hunt being completely open where anyone could post something to the homepage, it would be a bunch of spam and a bunch of garbage that, you know, wouldn't be authentic. So right now, 1-2% of the people that visit each month can actually post. And so we're curating and managing the flow of content that way. And these people find it from either their friends are building a product, or they see it on, you know, traditional press or in some forum or some blog or on Twitter. And some of them have this inherent kind of reaction to, oh, this is a cool product, I'm going to go post in the Product Hunt and be the first one to do that. So we're seeing more and more people sort of scooping products, like Slingshot, when it was sort of accidentally announced or released by Facebook, it was on Product Hunt before traditional press, and that drove a lot of attention to the site. Yo, which I'm sure, have you been playing with Yo at all?
You know what? We're going to talk about Yo later on in the show.
Okay.
So
okay.
We've been trying to all avoid right. it, but we just can't, Ryan.
Yeah, my mom just signed up yesterday. It was kind of, I didn't even tell her to sign up. I'm like, why? Anyway, we can talk about that later, but Yo was on Product Hunt, I think four or five weeks ago. And so we're seeing more and more products being on Product Hunt first before, you know, traditional outlets, just because we have so many people that are hunting for cool stuff. And also we have a huge competitive advantage in that we don't have to write an article. We just post a link and a title and a tagline.
Okay, so while I totally understand the fact that marketers ruin the internet, although I do marketing, so I'm a fan at some point. But I do have to ask this question in terms of monetizing the site, because it just seems to me like there are so many opportunities for you, because you are talking about products, to work with marketers. I mean, it's a scary territory to get into. But on the other hand, how are you going to make money off the site?
Yeah, and nothing against marketers. I consider myself in part marketing. I mean, Product Hunt needs marketing. But yeah, from a monetization perspective, right now we're making some money through job postings, and it's more opportunistic in that there's a huge audience of startup founders and talented people, and it just makes sense to promote jobs. Over time, you can imagine product promotions, and I think there are smart ways of doing that where it doesn't feel spammy and it feels authentic to the community. For example, I don't know if I've shared this, but an example of this could be, here's this product from last month that everyone seemed to love and enjoy. Why not pay to promote to get that in front of the audience and get more exposure for that product? So one, it's a product that the community enjoys, and the founder, the creator, they of course want to pay for more exposure and attention. So those are some ways of monetizing. There are other opportunities too that I think are a little bit more creative and experimental, but I'm at this time not worrying about monetization at all.
So right now you have the little verified posts. I mean, you kind of made reference to this. These are people who potentially have submitted their own products. So in terms of it working like that, I mean, does it get to a point where you don't want just people who are creating their own products submitting them, but you would rather a community of people who are just naturally and organically discovering stuff? Or do you care?
Yeah. Well, so right now, I don't have exact numbers, but roughly 20% of the posts are probably from the founders or creators themselves. The 80%, the majority, are from people that find these products. So we're already getting that organic flow of product submissions. And in fact, we're getting some people. Last week, I had two people email me with concerns that their product would be hunted or posted before they're ready. And so, in fact, I had one person submitted a link to an enterprise download link to Apple, which is not supposed to be public information for a product. And so we're seeing people posting products before the founders are even like wanting the attention. And that brings this whole conversation around, how do you manage that? As you know, I don't want to have editorial control over that, but there's an argument for the founder to say, I'm not ready. But at the same time, it's like information will spread and information will get out there.
So can you talk about maybe a couple things that you found here that you hadn't seen anywhere else? I know you mentioned one of them at the beginning of the interview, but I'm literally going through the site and I'm trying to listen to you at the same time, but I'm really finding a lot of great stuff that I just haven't seen anywhere else. So have there ever been any big surprises over the past week that you think you could talk about sharing with us, and some really cool stuff?
Yeah, so one of my favorites is something called Notifier. Have you heard of Notifier by chance?
Sounds familiar, but go ahead.
Yeah, so Notifier, the reason why it's one of my favorites is, one, it's the most upvoted product on Product Hunt. This was about a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago. Two, it was made by a 17-year-old, and it's spelled Notifier with a Y at the end.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Two, it was built by a 17-year-old in the Netherlands. So, you know, not someone who probably has like press connections or money or anything like that. Yet this product was posted by someone that knows him, and it got all this attention on Product Hunt. And from that, Romain Dillot from TechCrunch, he's on Product Hunt, and he wrote an article, I think the day after or 2 days after, on TechCrunch, and then a couple other outlets picked it up. And what I love about this story is that it's a 17-year-old in the Netherlands that built this and made this, and through Product Hunt, to an extent, he was able to get some exposure and love for this product. And, you know, the product is just a way to get push notifications from your phone on your Mac computer. So very simple, but useful, and people loved it.
And right now there's a bunch of stuff there that I love because it's all kind of geeky, kind of techy, but yeah. It seems like it's obvious that this could expand to so many other categories. Is it something you're thinking about?
Yeah. So it's right now the definition of a product is very vague, and it's intentional in that way because you want some serendipity. You want to find things you would never search for. And at this time it's curated with kind of a startup community. So you see techie type of products, but over time you could imagine some other categories or some other products being submitted. I mean, we already have books being submitted, video games being submitted. I know that there's been conversation around music and how do you curate music better online when there's so much creation out there. So, you know, Product Hunt, it's early, and I think there's opportunities elsewhere.
What do you think the key is for someone like yourself who has created something like this that, it's genius. It's really simple, but it's a great idea. And the community is obviously growing, but it's so easy in some ways to copy something like this. So how do you make sure that you continue to be the leader in a category like this?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the defensibility of Product Hunt is the community and the audience. So that, again, going back to the technology, there are open source applications that you could use to build this in a weekend. In fact, Nathan, who built the first version, it was over Thanksgiving break that he built it in like 5 days or so. So it was fairly quick. In terms of, the competitive side, it's really the community and making sure people enjoy it and there's continual progress in the product and people are excited about it. It's really hard to replicate something like this. And people that can do it, usually they have to have an existing audience, and you have to reach a certain tipping point in a community to make it interesting. I've seen a lot of communities pop up, like a Hacker News for X or Reddit for Y, and they never really reach escape velocity because they never reach that engagement level or that level of audience where there's continual content and continual discussion. And we've reached that now. And of course, competitors could come, but I can't really worry about that.
What else are you working on these days? Are you totally focused on this? Because I read a little bit about you online, and it seems like you have a few different things on the go.
Yeah, so I was actually working. So quick backstory is I was at a startup called Playhaven, and back in June or July, I decided that, I was ready to leave and do something different. And so I worked part-time there for a while and then left in January of this year. I was also helping out Tradecraft, which is a school for non-tech talent, teaching UX, growth, and sales. And so now I'm 100% focused on Product Hunt and, tweeting, emailing, working on product stuff, doing marketing, all that kind of stuff.
Last question for me, just because, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about this later on the show, but what do you think of Yo? Because I just read it only took 8 hours to create Yo. More than 1 million people have downloaded it. I feel like it's absolutely silly, but maybe I'm just not getting something. So what do you think?
So it's funny you mentioned that. Eric, who's helping me on product, he actually did an interview with Orr, the CEO of Yo, and we just published it this morning. And Yo, he recognizes that Yo is not going to stick around. You're not going to keep using Yo for several weeks and weeks. It has a great hook, and it actually has some compelling elements of something interesting. There's like a nugget of something there. Now, it's silly. The current product is not going to sustain, but there's a nugget of something there. And I think it's the fact that how do you change the way that notifications work? And then thinking about iOS 8, now that you can interact with these notifications, what does that look like? So he's working on an API, actually has an API available, and they're doing a Yo hackathon, I think, in a week, I want to say. Okay. And so he's opening it up to creativity. He doesn't know where it's going exactly. He has some ideas, and I'm excited to see where it goes. Who knows? I think it's interesting. It's fun. It's amazing how much it blew up.
I mean, is this the future of apps, right? I mean, this is what I wonder about. Is the future that there are these simple little apps that are kind of disposable in some ways that you just don't keep in your phone for a long time, but it's an opportunity for a developer to get some attention, do something different, and maybe we just don't have those apps anymore that we use on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, I mean, it's it varies depending on what you're doing, but the key thing about Yo, and I think one of the lessons is, how do you break through and get attention? And at the very least, Yo succeeded in that. They built something interesting and fun and something that people want to talk about. And that's step one in anything. How do you just get attention? You can build the coolest product in the world, but if you're not going to get any exposure for it, then it doesn't really matter. So I don't know. It's the products that do well on Product Hunt are usually the simple ones that are easy to describe. And the ones that are just don't get much traction or attention are the more complicated ones. Now, that's a sample and a context that's different than the macro ecosystem of products and marketing. But I think that's an important lesson, is just how do you communicate who your product is for, what it does, very clearly.
And last question for me, because even though I know you're invested in Product Hunt, you're working on it, spending a lot of time on it, I just get the feeling that long term you have bigger goals, you know, years down the road. Where do you see yourself, say, 10 years down the road?
Oh, man. you know, I just like working on products. Like, frankly, I was in a transition state during my transition out of Playhaven. I was figuring out what I was going to do. I always am into startups and wanted to join a startup, but I was also considering, like, do I want to work in VC? That would be fun. That would be interesting. And maybe long-term when I'm, you know, 35, that might be a good career path. But, you know, for now, I just want to continue building something like Product Hunt, and I can see myself working on it for a long time. I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
All right. So just last little thing from you. Where can people go to get more information about what you're doing and what can they expect in the next few weeks?
Yeah. So you can, of course, go to producthunt.com. My personal blog is ryanhoover.me, and I'm just RR Hoover on Twitter. And for the next few weeks, we're actually working on, I'm in staging right now, testing a new invite recommendation system so that we can have the community invite new people to contribute. And we're also working on an API ourselves to open up to the community so that they can build cool hacks on Product Hunt. And we're also, I don't know if I've announced this much publicly, but we're working on an iOS app as well. And David's making some great progress on that. So,
well, you just announced it right now. There you go. It's amazing what we get out of you on these shows. Yeah, anyway, it's all good. Thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck with everything. I know for people who watch or listen to The Social Hour, they will love to check out your site and follow along with what you're doing. We'll put all of those links that you mentioned into our show notes. So thanks so much, Ryan.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Amber.
All right, so some great news. Sarah is here because she has just been fighting traffic, and
hello.
I'm so happy to see you, Sarah.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm so glad that the accident was not involving me. Unfortunately, it set me back a good 40 minutes. Not the thing you want first thing in the morning, but Amber, I'm full of coffee, and I'm ready to talk some social news.
Perfect. I live in Toronto, so we have terrible traffic, so I understand the pain that you probably just went through. It's not fun.
Yeah, I felt very helpless. But hey, what are you going to do? The weather's nice otherwise, and you know, the World Cup is happening. So this was an interesting piece of news. We're shooting the show a little bit early from when it's going to air, if you're not watching us live, but still will be new a couple by the time it airs. And that is the idea that Facebook may launch a work version of Facebook, which, Amber, if I understand this TechCrunch story correctly, and these are anonymous sources talking to TechCrunch, the company realizes that there are a lot of people hanging out on Facebook all day at work, which you might equate with not working. But if Facebook were to add more resources to their product that actually help people in the workplace, that would, you know, they wouldn't have to fight for eyeball time.
Yeah, I think it's not a bad idea. You know, I have a really good friend who lives here. He just wrote a book called The Dakota Company. And one of the things that they did at their company is that they banned email entirely.
Oh, my gosh.
So, which is a great idea because, and this gets back to Facebook in some respects, but I just think that email is becoming less effective all the time. And we're going to have to come up with these more collaborative tools. And Facebook, in some sense, is really a great tool in terms of the groups, a place where people can go and have conversations. But I also think, Sarah, I mean, I love the message Messenger app, and I was kind of off Facebook. And I think it's safe to say that the Messenger app actually brought me back into the Facebook universe because I think it's that good and pretty slick too.
Well, you and I agree on that. I love the Messenger app. I use it daily, not with that many people, but with the few friends that I do chat with on Facebook Messenger. I love it. I really do think it's a much better tool than just traditional SMS. And there are a lot of things, you know, it's funny, I have a couple of friends that work at Facebook or have worked at Facebook over the last couple of years. And I know a little bit about some of their collaborative tools. And of course, that's why wouldn't they use Facebook, of course, because they're testing out the Facebook experience for the rest of us. But Facebook groups work really well for particular teams to share information, documents, photos, just kind of have a running commentary. And I think that that is an underutilized part of Facebook in the enterprise or even with a small team. You tend to think of Facebook groups as, oh, maybe my family and I could create a Facebook group or, you know, for our monthly book club or something like that. But I think in a workplace scenario, it's actually, you could almost put it in competition with, you know, Google Drive and documents that everybody can see at one time.
Yeah, and also the learning curve. I mean, it's much easier because chances are most people are already comfortable with the Facebook environment, so you're not forcing them to learn an entirely new platform. And I think that's got to be one of the reasons that it would make sense that businesses can easily get people to start using Facebook for business purposes, especially if they add more tools. And I don't think it's a terrible idea. It's an interesting idea for Facebook to want to go in that direction, and I think it could work.
You know, Scooter X in our chat room says, and this is a tip that I've never tried before. Let's see, who could I send something to? Can I send something to myself in Facebook Messenger? I don't actually want to try this out with anybody. Let's see. I don't think I can. Well, maybe. Let's see. Hi. Create. No, I can't only message myself in Facebook Messenger. Scooter X says, if you are, I'll message you, duh.
Yeah.
Jeez, what's wrong with me? Okay.
I was just going to say.
So if I'm messaging Amber Mac, why is it making me create a group recent to Amber? There we go. Oh, okay. So if I was to, Anthony, I don't know if you, yeah. Scooter X says, the longer you hold the thumbs up button, the larger the thumbs up will actually be. So if I say hi to Amber,
I
say, oh my gosh, that's right. Oh my God, that's so funny.
Oh my gosh.
So I could send you that one, or I could send you, Oh, see, this is what I love about Facebook Messenger. Sorry. Scooter X, that is such a good tip. I wish I had it on i5, but now I know. You can create a larger thumb just by pressing and holding.
That's
great.
That is kind of fun. Yeah, it's very
little
cool.
Things in life that make me happy, Amber. I don't know.
You know what? It's a great little app. There's a couple people who I use it with regularly, and I just feel like it saves me on constantly going into my text messages or emails, and I'm a big fan. So it's kind of brought me back to Facebook. And speaking of Facebook, we have another story here that has an interesting headline. It says, "Surprise, your friends hate your Facebook relationship PDA."
Oh, boy. Yep, yep. Mm-hmm.
And this is based on a study by a professor at a school in Pennsylvania who basically went in and was dissecting the social politics of Facebook relationships. And based on that, it's pretty simple. I mean, they say that the more you share about your personal relationship with your partner, the more people dislike you, particularly, it seems, if you have a really happy relationship. It's a sad state of affairs, Sarah.
Yeah, I think that's there are some exceptions. Shannon Morse, who works with us here at Twit, just got married, and she's, you know, posting a lot of happy photos of the wedding that was just like a week ago. And, you know, that's the sort of thing where it's like, yeah, of course, there are moments in people's lives where you're genuinely happy for them and you like to see the photos and, you know, the love is spread and everybody's got nice things to say. But collectively, there are certain people. And really, there are certain people who just overshare that sort of thing. Like, I'm so happy. Look how great my relationship is. But then when you have too many of the same people doing the same thing, you just want to barf. And I don't know why that is. And I don't think it has anything to do with, like, competition or jealousy. It's just a little, it's almost like the more it's shoved in front of my face, the more I wonder what's wrong. It's like, you know, what the motivation is.
It's like an all-you-can-eat buffet. Like, it's good at first, and then the more you're there, the more you eat, the more sick you feel. Like, it's just, there's a point where you have to stop. But also, I learned a new term from this article on Time, and we'll put this article in the show notes, and the term is Ralphies. It's a relationship selfie. Oh, I've not learned that before.
That sounds like Ralphie, which is about right.
we're gonna change that term, just so everybody knows.
Ralphies? That's just, I mean, come on. Oh, dear. Well, yeah, I don't know what the answer is, because it's like, it's not, the answer is not stop telling people that you're happy in your relationship, whoever it might be with. You know, I guess it's probably along the same lines as people who never like to see me post pictures of my cats. I mean, there are just certain things that rub people the wrong way, and it probably has more to do with the person that's looking at their Facebook newsfeed than the person who's sharing a happy moment. But yeah, I am not surprised to hear that that in a poll, most people would prefer to see less of that.
And I mean, maybe at the end of the day, Sarah, it really comes down to balance, right? And I do this sometimes on Instagram. I look in my feed of all of my photo stream, all of the pictures that I've shared on Instagram. And if I have too many selfies, I get a little bit embarrassed because I think, oh, this is absolutely ridiculous. So I'm trying to find that balance with selfies and pictures of friends and things. And I think it's the same thing on Facebook. When you're just commenting on social media about one topic over and over again, it's nauseating for the people who are following you. And that's where we can all kind of take an inventory on a regular basis of what we're putting out there and make sure that, you know, there's value for everybody.
iPhone 51883, good username, in our chat room says, no one likes a show off. And I think that that's probably a pretty succinct way to describe it. It's there is a line between, I am really happy, I want to share, you know, my happiness with you, too. I'm happier than you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether or not it's intended, I think that those sorts of things do come out sometimes, and people end up taking it in a less than positive way.
I think you're right. Now, speaking of relationships, if you're in Brazil and you're following along with the World Cup, you may also be on Tinder. Based on this article that we have here also in our show notes, it says that the dating app Tinder sees 750 million swipes and 10 million matches every single day. And they've seen a 50% increase in downloads and usage in Brazil since the World Cup began.
Wow. Now, do you think that that has anything to do with the fact that, you know, the article almost wants to imply that somehow soccer is making everybody want to date each other that much more? It's probably, you know, a lot of like, hey, a bunch of people are in town that aren't usually, and nobody's there for very long, and there's, you know, kind of a sense of excitement. Not that a lot of people don't go to Brazil on vacation normally, but I would say perhaps there's a little bit more of just like, ooh, international folks, let's see who's around type of thing, especially on something like Tinder, which doesn't have to be a dating app. It can be used for other things, but for the most part is. And for some people, it is kind of a right now, who's around type of an app. If you get my
I think you're exactly right. I mean, this article says that an estimated 600,000 tourists from 186 countries are expected to visit Brazil during the World Cup. So obviously a lot of people who are just there maybe for a good time. And it kind of makes sense, I think, that Tinder sees an increase. 50% is a pretty high increase, but maybe not too surprising, because I do believe the first time I heard about Tinder was from someone who was using it when they were at the Winter Olympics, and it got a lot of attention there. So it goes back to sporting events, people from out of town, Tinder. It's kind of a
I think you and I actually talked about, it was a story about the actual Olympic athletes, I think.
Yes,
that
I think
were
so, yeah.
That were, you know, they were all, again, it's sort of the same thing. It's like, dump everybody in one place. There's men, there's women. People are, you know, extremely fit. And, you know, I guess soccer's the same idea for the most part. You know, it's funny, in the same article, it also notes, which was at Quartz.com, it notes that not only is our social and dating app downloads on the rise, but so are beer sales. And I think for many people, the two go hand in hand.
apparently. So for our social gig of the week, we often talk about a job listing that is out there in the social media or digital marketing world. This one is a little bit different. It is a job listing that was on the Washington Post. However, they had to pull the ad. They recently put it back up after they revised it, because what they said in the original ad is that they needed a social media editor with the ability to explain to those twice your age what Reddit or Snapchat or Whisper or FARC is. Further, they said, bonus if you've convinced them to use any of these platforms. So I thought it was kind of funny, but they've pulled it down.
I like to think that I would be really good at this job. I don't know. I don't know if I would or not. You know, it's the sort of thing where it's like, if you know how to do something, then you think to yourself, oh, yeah, I could explain this to you. But sometimes it's hard to explain. And I think that, you know, it was funny, Amber. A couple of years ago, I was in Idaho, of all places, and I was kind of teaching a room of people who had varying, they were on varying levels of social media knowledge, kind of, you know, like the ins and outs of Twitter. And I remember hearing myself talk and thinking, I'm not explaining this very well because I'm assuming that they know things that they don't. And it was a really good exercise for me to be like, you know, I said something at DM and someone says, well, what's that? And I was like, yeah, you know, I have to start way farther at the beginning. And that's a good exercise for everybody because you realize so much of vernacular and, you know, acronyms and things that people are throwing out that for a lot of people, not necessarily older people, but certainly older people who didn't have these tools when they were, you know, our age, it can really make you feel behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I wish I could say to you after just thinking of speaking events that after speaking for the past 8 or so years doing keynotes, I wish I could say that, okay, people totally get Twitter now, but I don't have that same reaction. I mean, most of the events that I speak at on a regular basis, they're still asking the basics, right? I mean, we're so immersed in this world that we assume everybody understands how to use all these different tools. But at the end of the day, I mean, probably the number one reaction I get from a certain generation, at least, who isn't using technology is just, why would I ever want to do that? That's the number one question.
Yeah, that is the number one question that I feel that I get too is, but why do I want to do that?
It's why, like, why?
Well, I don't know that you do. That's sort of the beauty of social media, right? Is there are tools that work for some people and not others. And it's certainly not compulsory to use all of them. In fact, it's kind of a waste of time unless you feel like you're getting something out of it. But I'm actually, Amber, I think I mentioned last week when we were doing some of our shows, I'm going to be talking in front of a group of people. And I think there's a little bit of a, you know, social media learning curve. What does Sarah think about all of this stuff? So I'm going to tap into your 8 years of speaking knowledge to help me figure out what I have to say.
Sarah, and you have to use Canva. It's amazing.
Okay. All right.
I don't know if I mentioned this. I guess Guy Kawasaki was on the show recently, mm-hmm. maybe the week before last, but he was talking about Canva, and I just had a big document, a presentation that I had to do with someone, and I decided I would use it instead of Keynote, and I fell in love with it. It's awesome. So give it a try. It's totally free, and you know, sometimes you'll find an image in Canva that you want to use that they may charge 99 cents for. I think my whole presentation cost me $3 because I bought some really great images, but most of the images are free, and it's just an awesome little tool.
Yeah, if you missed our interview with Guy Kawasaki, again, Amber, you're right, it was several episodes ago. Guy is now chief evangelist over at canva.com, canva.com, and I haven't actually used it in, you know, for practical usage rather than just clicking around, but Amber, it's so good to know that it worked out well for you. It helps put together designs based on, you know, ideas that you want to convey, and it's really nicely done, and I will have to use that. That is a good tip.
It's a good one.
Good tip happening during the show. Let's move on to a spotlight that this makes me feel kind of warm and fuzzy inside. Google has invested $50 million into a program for girls called Made with Code.
Yeah, this is neat. You know, we've been hearing a lot in the news about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and how more and more people are trying to put an emphasis on those different things for young people, particularly girls. So we see products out there like Goldie Blocks. I'm not sure if you've seen Goldie Blocks, but kind of it's a little like Lego, but for girls. And yeah, just like you said, Google's investing $15 million in this program to get girls excited about computer science, saying even though people talk about closing the gender gap in the tech industry and it's starting to happen, we still have a lot of progress to be able to really get to the point where more and more girls are interested in these topics. So great to see Google doing that, and it'll be fun to see how that evolves. So it's a 3-year project, and hopefully $15 million gets them a lot of exposure and a lot of reach to young women, or young girls, I should say.
Yeah, especially since, I mean, we're talking about Google. $50 million is a very small drop in the bucket, but for people who can benefit from that kind of investment, it's really, really important, and it's nice to see that so much effort is going into, you know, that this whole gender divide and the fact that girls can code, and we are slowly but surely, I believe, breaking down some of the barriers that you know, have held women back from some of the jobs that they are absolutely capable of doing. You know, Amber, just a little side note, you know, this is not so much just about gender, but you notice that a lot of the big companies these days are publishing their diversity reports. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed, like, LinkedIn did, Facebook did recently. And the whole takeaway from it is, oh, there are still, you know, there's not enough diversity, race diversity, gender diversity in a lot of these large tech companies. Now what do we do? And it kind of struck me as odd, because it's sort of like, where did these diversity reports all come from? Is it some sort of mandatory thing that at least companies that are based in the U.S. are required to submit? It seems more just like a trend to be transparent. And there's not much to do when you're looking at numbers like, okay, well, this company doesn't, you know, have that many minorities compared to another company. Mm-hmm. But I think that just, yeah, here's the recent Facebook diversity report. 69% male, 57% white. That's somewhat of a trend. Oh, look, there's you, Amber, over there on the Delta thing over on the right-hand side. That's awesome.
Oh, I've never seen it on TechCrunch yet.
So you haven't? Oh, there it is. Yeah, it's there. But I think that these reports, if you take them at face value, it doesn't really mean much, and probably not surprising to most people. But I think the more that these types of percentages are public, end up only helping all of us, because it just gets the conversation going.
Yeah, it definitely does. And it makes it more open and just everything more transparent, I think. And that's hopefully what they're aiming for with doing some of this. So it makes sense to me. Now, Sarah, I know we only have a couple more stories left. Every time I see a story that includes a cat or a dog, I kind of include it if it has some social media reference. And I just figure, you know, people love pets. And this is a fun one. And it's all about Vine and about Milkbone being the brand of dog bones using Vine. And in fact, I guess they hooked up with Gary Vee and his company VaynerMedia and their sister Vine agency Grape Story to produce a bunch of pieces of branded content, you know, quick little Vine videos with some Vine stars to raise awareness about Milkbone and their products and what they do. And they've had some pretty good success. Just thought it was a neat example, as we've had a Vine star on the show in the past, being Brittle Star a few weeks ago, to see more what brands are doing. So I'm always amazed with what people can do in 6 seconds.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm really starting to love these creative Vines. I mean, not that I'm submitting any of my own, but they are really good. And yeah, I think it's awesome. Especially, yeah, Brittle Star, who was our sort of Vine celebrity, the first real, I would say, Vine celebrity that we've had, at least a really, really big Vine celebrity. And it was fun to hear him talk about, you know, how he puts together something that he knows is only going to be 6 seconds. And sometimes there's post-production. And obviously, if we're talking about, you know, the marketing side of things, you've got a company who can put a little bit of money and post behind some sort of a Vine. But I think it's adorable. And I wish that I had a dog so that I could buy them milkbones.
It's intimidating, though, because people are so creative on Vine. I feel like I don't want to do anything because these people are outdoing the rest of us. But nonetheless, I got to try. try it at some point.
I think it's all about the audience, Amber, honestly. I've taken, and maybe it's because I think that I'm more artistic than I actually am, but over on Instagram, which I post to very regularly, sometimes I'll post something that I think is so, it's such a good photo. It's very artistic, you know, it's kind of, you know, it sort of follows all those rules of what makes a cool photo on Instagram. And I really don't get that many likes at all. You know, people seem to like certain kinds of things that I post and really not others. It doesn't resonate with my audience well. And I think that I don't know, maybe it's because I don't have a lot of people who appreciate fine art photography that are following me. But yeah, I think Vine is the same thing. It's about building your community, and you can curate that somewhat, but then you almost have to, pander is not the right word, but you know, give the people what they want, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I think it, you know, anyway, it's fun to see more and more creativity come out of this space. And speaking of creative things, we have our rad or fad, Sarah. Should we get to that?
I think we should. Yeah. Without further ado, let's get into our rad or fad of the week. Amber, what do we got?
Okay, so Ryan and I talked about this earlier on the show when he came on at the beginning of the episode, and we talked about, of course, Yo, the app, because it doesn't appear to be going away anytime soon, and they've had more than 1 million downloads. This is the simple app that we've talked about in the past that basically sends Yo to someone you know, and I found out that it only took 8 hours to make this app, which kind of blows my mind, although it is simple, but 8 hours is not much time, and it's getting a ton of attention. So is this rad, Sarah, or is it a fad that's going to die soon?
Oh, it's already dead, Amber. Okay, so I've been using Yo. You have to, it's weird. It's like when I, there we go. If I open up Yo, you have a nice little list of people that I have Yo'd with somewhat recently. Tap to update, set a password, tap to update. Oh, great. Now I need to set a password, apparently. You know, Yo was hacked a while ago, so that's probably what this is. Let's see. Let me just see if I can open it up really quick and show everybody how it works. I think we briefly did. Okay. So here we are. And yeah, all it really does is allow you to Yo somebody. So Chief Twit is, I think it's Leo, or it might be somebody who took Leo's username. And now the person on the other side, Chief Tate, that's definitely not somebody that I know. Or Ice Cookin', not somebody that I know. And that's all it does. That's literally all it does, Amber. And I think that it has gotten a lot of attention in Silicon Valley. And sort of, when I say Silicon Valley, sort of the people who make apps. Because it's so simplistic that I think people are reading too much into what it all means. I mean, I've read reports of Yo as, you know, this is something that it's really breaking down communication barriers and simplifying things between people. And I'm like, no, it's a gimmick and it's stupid. And I can't imagine any of us even talking about it 30 days from now.
I'm just laughing because I just searched Yo in Google News and the top article says India has a fitting response to Yo, and then it says, comma, the dumbest app ever. So it's good to know people feel the same way that we feel. But yeah, I think it's kind of over. I think it's a big fat fad, and I never ever thought it was rad. So I don't know how it got to 1 million+, but there's something I don't know.
Yeah, I reviewed it on a recent episode of i5, and I kind of summed it up with, because I tried to be, you know, I wasn't trying to be super brutal to the people that make apps, because, hey, I've never made an app, so, you know, who am I? But I said, it's just starting to get weird, because it's like, there's an app for everything. You know, the term, there's an app for that, really does come from that. And now it's getting weird. People are making apps that don't necessarily make a lot of logical sense, I think, just to do it, because there aren't that many ideas left. It's sort of like when .com business names started getting weird and people started dropping vowels because the domains were all going away. Mm-hmm. So you had to get creative with your name because you need that .com, right? And it sort of started this weird trend, and I think we've come back from that somewhat because there are other ways to have an online presence. But apps are getting weird. And I think Yo is a great example of that, where it's like everybody's so crazy for this new thing that they jump on the bandwagon of something that is nothing. It's like the emperor's new clothes. Like, there's nothing here. There's nothing to see.
I know. And you know what? I take back my comment that people were getting smarter online when talking about Yo, because I just see two articles here published within one of them in the past 2 hours, one from The Guardian that says why wearables success depends on being like Yo. And on The New Yorker, on their blog, it says a Yo is lovely to receive. So I don't know.
Is it, though? Well, you know, I'm getting a lot of Yos from people that I don't know. So I think that that's all relative, the loveliness of Yo.
So it's a fad.
It's such a fad. It is two fads across the board, two emphatic fads. Well, Amber, I think that that's probably a great time for us to say this was a lovely social hour. And I am thank you so much for taking care of our interview while I was stuck in traffic, Ryan Hoover of Product Hunt, and a really interesting guy. He is, you talk about somebody who's prolific online. He absolutely is. And I look forward to doing the show again in a couple of hours with you. For anybody who's watching After the Fact, a quick reminder, we did pre-record this show to accommodate a vacation that I'm taking next week. So if anything sounds a little bit, are they speaking in the future? It's sort of what happened here.
I like that.
Yeah, but in the meantime, until you see us again, we love hearing from you. The Social Hour at twit.tv is our email address. Of course, you can always go to twit.tv/socialhour. No, twit.tv/TSH. Oh, Sarah, where you can catch up with all of our past interviews, past shows. You can subscribe to the show. All of that good stuff is always there. Of course, Amber and I are online waiting to take all of your questions, comments, or feedback throughout the week between our shows. Until next week, Amber, anything crazy on the horizon for you?
Not too much, Sarah. Just, staying sane, enjoying the summer. So all is good.
Awesome. Well, thanks, everybody, for watching this episode of The Social Hour. I'm Sarah Layton.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.